You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. And welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Tuesday afternoon. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. In a moment, I'm going to be joined by Greta Bedakovic. She is with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to be talking about what is going on with the mid-decade redistricting and the race to the bottom. How do we fix this particular problem of gerrymandering to serve one political party or the other? It's never good. I myself want to see competitive districts. But before we get there, we got to take care of a bit of business. Here's some of the breaking news of the day. Federal prosecutors unsealed a felony indictment late yesterday alleging that an LGBTQIA civil rights lawyer made a false declaration to a panel of federal judges in Alabama who were looking into allegations of judge shopping by LGBTQIA-aligned legal organizations that were challenging the state's ban on gender-affirming medical care for transgender minors. The indictment of Carl Charles, who is counsel in the Southern Regional Office of Lambda Legal, is not actually about those allegations, but it's an allegation that he, again, said something that was false to a panel of federal judges. I've looked into the details of this case, and I just want you to all know this. What he was being asked about was not clear. It was about a set of things that had occurred in this litigation in a week span of time that were very confusing. And he, within hours, corrected and added more information to his testimony to those judges. That is not a criminal offense. It is very clear that he didn't intend to mislead, that he tried to correct the record as soon as he remembered or reviewed his phone records. And I put that in sharp contrast to the intentional fabrications and lies that come out every day by Donald Trump and most of his cabinet. If we put all of those people under oath, if I put Scott Bessent under oath and I said, "Do customers pay tariffs?" What do you think he would say? Do you think he would say no? Yeah. That happened again yesterday, that indictment getting unsealed quite late. I also wanted to share you a bit of breaking news about some polling information. In the latest YouGov and Economist poll, Donald Trump has lost a whopping 20 points, taking him from overall positive approval ratings to deep negative disapproval ratings since his inauguration. Again, that is a swing of 20 points in this Economist YouGov polling. It is 20. He is now 22% negative. In January, he's basically almost even. Now he is fully underwater. It is pretty outstanding. And close to home, locally here in the state of Wisconsin, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, frequent guest of this program, has formally launched his campaign to become Wisconsin's next governor. He joins the race with Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez in the Democratic primary field, although folks expect others to potentially jump in, as well as on the Republican side, manufacturing CEO Bill Berrien and Washington County Executive Josh Showman. We will be talking to the county executive very soon on this program. Can't wait to have that fine discussion. And with that, very excited to introduce you all to Greta Bedakovic. She is with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She's worked on Capitol Hill as a policy advisor in the U.S. Senate Committee on Rules and Administration for Senator Amy Klobuchar. She knows a lot about voting and election security administration. So welcome to the show, Greta. Can you just bring us up to speed? Like, where do we stand right now in terms of this mid-decade gerrymandering? I'm pretty sure we got the new maps are happening in Texas. California has approved a ballot measure that voters will vote on about whether or not they will, in fact, adopt those new maps. They will vote on that in November. And now Missouri's House of Representatives has approved a new map in Missouri, as I understand it. Is that the current state of play? Flesh this out for folks a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. I think that's a great recap of the situation that we're at. And the only nuance I'd add, you know, is that we saw Texas Republicans gerrymandering another five congressional districts, right? Five of them directly at the orders of President Trump, which, as you just read out on the polling, is exactly why they're doing this, to escape accountability, to escape voters, to make sure that they're not losing the House because of their unpopular policies, with that five-seat pickup in Texas, and Governor Newsom's proposal that voters will vote on would provide additional five Democratic-leaning districts for California, essentially neutralizing, right, what Texas is trying to do. And now we have Missouri, which is trying to pick up one additional congressional seat directly for President Trump. And the next question is going to be which blue state is going to answer that one seat pickup, and whether or not states like Florida, Nebraska, and Indiana are also going to go ahead and continue or start redistricting at the order of the president.
This seems to me to be problematic on many, many fronts. Not only that Texas has their maps, the maps have been triggered in most of our states by the decennial census. When he orders up a mid-decade gerrymander, doesn't that, by definition, isn't that basically election fraud, if you follow my logic? You know, Donald Trump screams about they're stolen elections, blah blah blah. But if you're directing your allies who control state legislatures and state governor's offices to engage in an irregular, hasn't happened in a very long time, mid-decade gerrymandering to give you more seats, that to me is election fraud. You're stealing votes from people. You're undoing the will of voters. Or is that too much of an exaggeration, Greta?
I don't think it's an exaggeration. I think it's election rigging, plain and simple. He's made very clear this is explicitly to pick up Republican seats, explicitly so that he can hold on to power in Congress. I think it's also important to understand this is not the first time that he's tried to rig elections in this way, right? We all remember in 2020 when he called Brad Raffensperger down in Georgia to find 12,000 additional votes. Now he wants five Republican seats. The same thing is happening again.
Yeah, it's... It seems to me that if a Democrat had ever attempted this, literally people would be taking to the streets armed on what occurred on January 6th. Like, if that, based on a lie, was enough for people to take up arms and beat the hell out of cops and stop the peaceful transition of power, if this was a Democratic president pulling the same thing in completely blue-controlled states, do you think the don't tread on me folks might be taking up arms? I mean, why? I don't understand the hypocrisy from Republicans. Why is this? What is the Republican defense for Donald Trump doing this? It's just my team that's winning, so it's fine.
I would also love to understand the hypocrisy. I mean, when Joe Biden, you know, tried to get departments like the Department of Education to register more students to vote through an online portal, Republicans thought that that was like a huge, you know, autocratic takeover. But Donald Trump picking up the phone for additional congressional seats is just fine. I mean, their reasoning behind this is essentially saying that they got the short end of the stick in the census, and that they should have had all these additional congressional seats anyway. And that's kind of how they're explaining away, you know, what they're doing right now. But it's important to note that the voters aren't buying it. I mean, their own voters are not buying this, right? Missouri polling has shown, Indiana polling has shown that voters do not want, independent Republican and Democrat, do not want their states to redistrict in response to Donald Trump, or like for Donald Trump. And so they don't have the voters on this either. And state legislatures really need to be listening to that if they want to keep their seats.
So we're in this race to the bottom. I have opined on this show, this is my opinion, this is not Greta's opinion. I have opined on this show that I think it is absolutely appropriate for Democrats to do this in response to election rigging by Donald Trump. And it is important for Democrats to do this because at the end of Donald Trump's reign of terror, I certainly hope that we have a democracy still. And I also think it has been in blue states, nearly exclusively, to the best of my knowledge, exclusively, that they have engaged and embraced independent redistricting committees and moved away from legislators or elected officials picking their voters instead of voters picking their elected officials. What's the solution here? Because it seems to me we should have some law that prohibits exactly what's happening here.
We 100% do need a law. So, you know, 4 years ago, Congress tried to pass federal redistricting standards that would have prevented this from happening. If the Freedom to Vote Act had passed that all Democrats voted for on a united basis, we would have not only an explicit ban on mid-decade redistricting, which is what Texas is doing, but also better guardrails to ban partisan and racial gerrymandering. So one, we absolutely need a federal law, but like you were saying too, we have 11 states that have made good faith efforts to kind of, you know, prevent the tide of gerrymandering on their own. 8 of those are Democratic governed, 3 of them are Republican governed, but these 11 states really just can't, you know, hold the fort on their own. And we don't see deep red states like Texas or Missouri coming to the table at all. And so really what we've seen over this like 2-decade project of redistricting commissions is in many ways Democrats have given up a lot of power in Congress in order to make these good faith efforts, so Republicans are not coming to the table. And so I think one of the things that we've been exploring and have put a proposal forward for is that states adopting these redistricting commissions, both blue and red, should put them on pause until Congress enacts federal standards and we can truly realize the potential of these commissions, because right now they're being taken advantage of.
This is the thing that if I was in a thoroughly red county or a blue county in a state of an opposite overarching power structure, so I'm tend to be a Trump voter in a blue state, or I tend to be a Democratic voter and I'm in a red state, we should be asking all of our elected officials to make this commitment, especially elected officials in our House of Representatives and Senate. But I'm going to focus on the House because, Greta, it seems to me, and the connection here is gerrymandering is bad for everybody, because the more gerrymandered the district is, the more your vote doesn't matter, not just for voters that vote with the dominating party in that district. Once that person is elected, they don't have to listen to you anymore because they're nearly certain to continue to win re-election. Gerrymandering puts legislatures, especially on the House side, basically into a completely unaccountable never-never land. If you think Congress is dysfunctional, if you want more bipartisanism, we need to get rid of the gerrymandering, and we're going to continue to discuss how to do that, the steps that you can undertake, and the specific legislation we should be asking all of our elected representatives to give a big bear hug to. When we come back, we're with Greta Bedakovich from the Center for American Progress Policy Fund, Action Fund. I'm getting all tongue twisted here. The Center for American Progress Action Fund. I'm Maggie Dawn. Stay with us despite my mumbles and fumbles right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. And welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour by Greta Bedakovich of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about the gerrymandering mid-decade redistricting race to the bottom and what we can all do to stop it. Gerrymandering's bad. It's bad for all of us. It's bad for democracy. It's bad for representative democracy. It's bad for a democratic republic like we've got. The list goes on and on. In short, gerrymandering is bad because it, one, can be used to, frankly, deprive people of the power of their vote based on folks' race. And more broadly, it not only can be incredibly racially discriminatory, but on the whole, it just makes elected officials totally unaccountable. Do we look at the House of Representatives every election cycle and go, well, that's a mess. They're not getting anything done. we can do something to make sure they get things done, to make sure that they engage in less partisanship and more bipartisanship or cross-partisanship. And that's by adopting federal laws that restrict gerrymandering, that makes partisan and racial gerrymandering illegal, that eliminates mid-decade gerrymandering. All of these things are possible. And in fact, Democrats proposed such legislation during the Biden administration. It was called the Freedom to Vote Act, and every single Democrat voted for it, but Republicans didn't. And that gets us to the reason why. Why is it that Republicans do not want to see every qualified citizen voting? And there's one reason why Republicans don't want to see every qualified citizen voting. And that's because they lose. When turnout is high in places like Wisconsin, Republicans lose. So with that, Greta, I want to bring you back into the conversation. We have so many challenges. This is one that it doesn't matter who does the polling, right? Like, generally speaking, conservatives and liberals hate this. We generally all think this is bad, just like we all know that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people, and that we should be able to legislate and restrict spending in elections. And yet we don't see this becoming law. We don't see these things that have wide agreement becoming law, which sort of brings us back to point one about some of these system reforms that are so essential. There are things being discussed that are termed a redistricting treaty. What are those, and why might they be helpful in this situation?
Yeah, we've seen an idea going around that we've proposed for American Progress as well, and this idea that as states are mid-decade redistricting in response to Texas and trying to neutralize bad actors trying to deliver seats to the president, states that have commissions that have kind of locked their power in this fight should set them aside in order to be able to fight this fight with all the fairness and tools that they need in their seat, in their tool belt to meet this moment, while also calling on Congress to impose the federal standards that we need and reinstate those commissions once we have those standards in place. Because it's fantastic that a lot of states have taken good faith efforts to ban redistricting, to ban gerrymandering in their states like California. But we see that if a state like Texas, just one bad actor, how much they can take advantage of the system, even though other states have taken good faith measures. And so we cannot allow that to happen again, and redistricting commissions can only really have the potential realized once Congress has acted.
Yeah, and Greta, this is fascinating to me because in the days that this was just hitting the news and we heard about the potential for this, I listened to liberal pundit after liberal pundit after, you know, election process reform advocate after election process reform advocate basically say, you know, California shouldn't do this in response. This is terrible. Democrats shouldn't do this. And I kept saying, what are you talking about that you can build into the legislation that may enable the mid-decade redistricting? You can build in the off-ramp, right? You can say, we'll go back to the independent commission when these preconditions are met. You can constrain the use of those mid-decade maps. If other red states back away from it, we'll back away from it. It was sort of like we were caught in the theoretical argument when there were very clear practical solutions to this overarching problem. It sounds like this is a bit of what the Center for American Progress Action Fund is proposing in these redistricting treaties. We build it into the legislation if indeed blue-controlled states engage in mid-decade redistricting. That's what this is, in effect, these off-ramps until we can get a federal law that solves this problem.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. But the only thing I'd add, you know, too, in this mid-decade redistricting fight, we're all talking about what happens until 2030 right now. That's where the conversation is about how we can, you know, prevent this problem or appease it until all states get to redistrict after the census. But I think the problem that we see, too, is that's when almost the real fight begins. Like, if we're seeing states like Texas, Missouri, and Florida coming to the table with a, you know, no hands bar approach now, what are they going to do in 2030 is what we have to be asking ourselves. And so states with commissions are mid-decade redistricting and taking that step, great. But back in 2030, in just a few years, they're essentially going to find themselves, you know, constrained again. And that's the problem that we're really trying to prevent because we know it's on the horizon.
And folks, just a reminder, there is a lawsuit going on right now, an original filing in our state Supreme Court brought forward by Law Forward. We've had their executive director, Jeff Mandel, on this program, making the argument that this sort of partisan gerrymandering is in effect anti-competitive and creates a monopoly of power, and that we should be drawing districts so that they are always competitive, so that every vote counts. We're going to talk to an election advocate on the other side. The incomparable Stacey Adams is next. Don't go anywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got nothing but one big love for my next special guest. She is a celebrated author, political strategist, producer, entrepreneur, lawyer, and voting rights advocate. She's written 17 books in almost every sort of genre you can imagine: romance, thrillers, nonfiction, and children's books. And her latest novel, Coded Justice, is the third in a series featuring Avery Keene, a former Supreme Court clerk turned corporate investigator. And in this latest book, Avery takes a deep dive into the ethical and justice implications of AI in veteran healthcare. And it's a story that begins with promise, but raises really, I think, poignant and timely questions about justice and ethics and artificial intelligence and technology more broadly. And aside from her writing, Leader Abrams has served for over a decade in the Georgia House of Representatives, including as minority leader. And she made history in that role as the first woman and first Black American to lead either party in the Georgia General Assembly. She also ran twice as a Democratic candidate for governor in Georgia in 2018 and again in 2022, making history in that first run as the first Black woman to be a major party's gubernatorial nominee. While she nearly lost both of those races, her campaigns drew national attention to voter suppression issues. And in response, she founded Fair Fight Action, an organization credited with increasing voter turnout in Georgia and contributing to those key Democratic victories in 2020 in the state of Georgia for Joe Biden and the Senate elections, bringing us Senator Raphael Warnock and beyond. She also made history in February 19, 2019, when she became the first African-American woman to deliver the response to then first-term President Donald Trump's State of the Union address. I watched that. You were amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Madam Stacey Abrams, for joining us here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Let's just jump right in because there is so much going on. First of all, you're in Madison, Wisconsin. You were born in Madison, so welcome back home to our great state. I spent a good amount of time in my first hour talking with a former U.S. attorney about the Supreme Court's shadow docket decision yesterday that basically said racial profiling, just fine with us. Apparently no Fourth Amendment problems there in what I can only call a really shocking and depressing decision. Trump has now claims to have launched Operation Midway Blitz in Chicago. I have to say, this feels like what was happening to Jewish folks and others in the 1930s. It feels like the Korematsu decision, where we interned Japanese folks in these United States, also during World War II. It feels like what Viktor Orban has done to Hungary, to strip away what are fundamental pillars of democracy, what many refer to as electoral autocracy. And I know you were on Jimmy Kimmel's show. Your appearance was fabulous. And when you were with Mr. Kimmel, you talked about these 10 steps to autocracy and authoritarianism. And so first, I wanted to get your reaction to yesterday's shadow docket ruling from the Supreme Court, and then talk a little about what these 10 steps are and why every American, no matter what your political preferences are, should be very concerned about what's going on.
Well, first of all, I thank you so much for being so thoughtful about how you're framing it, because our first responsibility when you are facing the rise of authoritarianism, when you're facing the onslaught and onset of autocracy, is that people have to recognize it. And it's not going to announce itself. They're not going to say, this is authoritarianism. What they're going to do is use the power they are seizing to accomplish the ends they desire. And you name checked some very important moments, but I would add to that Plessy v. Ferguson, yes, and Dred Scott, cases that stripped African Americans of citizenship and their right to access the Constitution. And what happened yesterday in the shadow docket decision was that the Supreme Court said that it was permissible, legally permissible in the United States of America to use racial profiling, to use accents, and to use race itself as a predicate for denying someone access to due process, which is guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment does not apply based on your citizenship. It applies based on your presence in the United States. And what they have said is very much akin to those decisions, which is that they are suspending the Constitution with respect to certain persons based exclusively and entirely on race and ethnicity and the vague presumption that an accent signals the same.
This bears repeating. They are suspending constitutional rights for persons based on their race and ethnicity. There is no moment in recorded human history where you look at an autocratic regime where that is not an element of that regime. The stripping of rights based on race should be anathema to every American of good faith. And this important point that you made, Leader Abrams, that the Constitution guarantees due process to all persons, does not limit those due process rights to only citizens. And that stripping away of that right based on someone's race should be a call to rise up and protest for all of us. So let's talk a little bit about these other 10 steps to autocracy and authoritarianism. You were describing them in your last response to my question, but let's dig in. What are some of those steps? Because I think when you start to describe them, the fact that they are occurring right now cannot be denied.
So the one we've just described is a combination of step 7, which is the using of marginalization to suspend and to scapegoat communities. They began with DEI. This administration suborned by Republicans. So this is not just about one man. This is about an entire party apparatus saying that this is permissible behavior. And so step 7 says that you scapegoat vulnerable communities because you need to blame someone for the ills that people are feeling and for the failures of the government that is seizing power. And so you scapegoat immigrants. You go after communities of color. And I want to put a fine point on this because something you said a second ago just triggered for me. I want to remind people that the reason that citizenship is such a critical non-metric in due process, Native Americans did not hold citizenship in the United States until 1921. And so had the 14th Amendment not applied to the presence in the United States, Native Americans would not have been entitled to due process in this country, not after 1865 and 1867, but not until 1921. So it's an incredibly important hallmark for us to hold that citizenship is not the metric. It is your presence in the United States. And that's important because that helps us get to step 9. One of the other metrics of an authoritarian regime that we are seeing play out in this country is that one of the intentions is to privatize violence and militarize law enforcement. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Gestapo. You mentioned what was happening in Germany in the 1930s, what happened in Hungary. What tends to happen is that autocrats will take law enforcement, which is typically domestic protection, and they convert it into military power. And Trump and his colleagues, suborned by governors like the governor of Georgia, the governor of Texas, governors who are sending National Guardsmen into American cities, they are doing so because they are allowing and supporting the militarization of our communities. That's called occupation. And when occupation happens, it rarely recedes. When they occupy a place, the goal is to hold it and then to expand from there. But this all begins with step 2, which is that we see the expansion of executive power. Step three, we see the weakening of competing powers. And the reason I'm so explicit about calling out all Republicans, because they are the ones who hold power. They hold all three branches of government. And those branches are supposed to put a check on step two. You shouldn't have an executive who can exceed their powers if you have a Congress that actually uses its powers, or a court like the Supreme Court that checks and mitigates the use of those powers. But what we're watching in step three is that Congress is complicit and the Supreme Court is suborning the seizure of constitutional powers and its warping. Then you go to step four, you break government so it doesn't work for anyone. And again, it's not this big fanfare. It's small things like, oh, I don't know, gutting the Department of Education. We had we have a guest coming up on our podcast, Assembly Required, where we talk about what happens when kids can't get IEPs, when they can't get individualized education plans. Well, that's going to be incredibly difficult in this country because they've broken the Department of Education, fired half of the staff, and one of the clear and key responsibilities of the Department of Education was to manage the needs of special education students in our country. To go really fast, step five, you install loyalists, and we can go back to that because that's what we're watching happen with the attacks on the Federal Reserve Governor, Lisa Cook, and the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Step six, you gut public information, so you go after the media. Step eight is when you attack everyone who should be protecting civil society. You sue lawyers, you sue law universities, you threaten philanthropies, because all of your work is to get to step 10, making sure that we do not have free and fair elections in this country ever again, so that people are held captive and that they are forced into a behavior that they may revile, but they can't fight against.
Folks, we are talking this afternoon with leader Stacey Abrams. There's so much in here. You're talking about these 10 steps to autocracy and authoritarianism. I just wanted to give the head faint. A lot of this is based on the framework discussed and the work by Professor Kim Lane Sheppel of Princeton University. I always want to drop that citation. You're a lawyer as well. Want to give that credit?
I always give her credit. I say that I use her framework. She allowed me to editorialize it and remix it a bit. Because
yes.
There are some frames that I've added in there that she's been incredibly supportive and has worked with me on this, but I want to make sure that people don't hold her accountable for some of the things I say.
Yes, your renewed or reinvigorated a lens that you bring to the table based on your lived experience, especially in the voting rights category. When you look at, again, step three, the weakening of competing powers, and we look at the attacks from Republicans over decades. This is nothing new, right? The erosion of the Voting Rights Act, the direct attacks on the Voting Rights Act, now the complicit Supreme Court, and the weakening of the powers of the Voting Rights Act, frankly, gutting it in many ways. And all of these false strawmen, these red herrings about voter fraud. The fraud is the thing that's happening out loud and at scale. The efforts to disenfranchise duly qualified citizen electors, the fake slates of electors here in the state of Wisconsin and elsewhere. I wonder, given your advocacy for voting rights, if you can speak to the folks listening a bit. I view that as a bulwark. And so we're going to ask Leader Abrams, just very briefly, what should folks be working on when it comes to voting rights? When we come back on the other side, we may even talk a little fun stuff about her latest novel. All of that and so much more coming up next. Do not go anywhere. This incredibly important discussion continues. Why every Wisconsinite and every American should be paying attention to the autocracy happening today in our streets, in our schools, and in our voting booths. Our conversation continues. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. And here we go, indeed. We've got Leader Stacey Abrams with us this afternoon to close out this show. We're so glad that you are all with us. Right before the break, we were talking about in these 10 steps to autocracy and authoritarianism, step three is weaken competing powers. This has been part of the Republican playbook when it comes to voting access and voting rights for 30 years. It has sort of reached fever pitch at this moment. And you have one of your passions, if I can say, has been voting rights and access to the voting booth. What should all people, regardless of party preference, be concerned about the particular ways that the MAGA regime has been eroding both trust and faith in election processes, but almost as importantly, if not more importantly, access, the actual franchise, the access to the voting booth and the right to vote itself?
So step three, you weaken competing powers. And step 10, you try to ensure that there are no future elections of import. So we have to remember that Russia has an election every few years, but we always know who's going to win. So they don't eliminate voting. They eliminate the power of the vote. And Republicans have been assiduously attacking the power of the vote for the last 30 years. Wisconsin was ground zero. When Wisconsin passed its voter ID law in 2014, you all faced a Supreme Court case where a Black woman was denied the right to vote because her ID did not come with an original birth certificate, but because she was born during the Jim Crow era, she was denied a compliant birth certificate. So when we hear the language of, oh, voter ID, no one disagrees that you should have ID. Everyone aggressively believes that you should have ID. The question is, what type of ID? What are the requirements for that ID? That's what's been weaponized. You talked about the specter of voter fraud, which is a complete and utter myth. There is no voter fraud. It is more likely that you will be struck by lightning because fraud means intent to pretend to do, I mean, I'm not gonna go into too much detail, but put it this way. You are more likely to get struck by lightning than someone is to commit voter fraud in this country. We have an issue with voter participation, not voter fraud. But the larger narrative that we have to understand is that they do not want people to participate in elections. And if they do, they want to make it so difficult that it seems nearly impossible for it to matter. And the way I talk about voter suppression is, can you register and stay on the rolls? Can you cast a ballot? And does that ballot get counted? But what they're also the machinery they are also manipulating is what we're watching happen in Texas and now in Missouri, right. What they are trying to do in other states, which is they're trying to redraw the lines in the middle of the process so that they can't lose anymore. That's the voter manipulation that we need to watch. But we also have to recognize they're also trying to defund election security. They're trying to blackmail local governments. And so our responsibility is to demand access, not just to the ballot, but to the power of the vote. That when we vote for someone, that person should be the person who's actually elected to hold power.
Not just the vote itself, but the power of the vote, the import of the vote, because it stands for how we hold government accountable. Without the power behind the vote, I understand why people have felt disengaged. Absolutely. When that system works, it makes you feel disengaged, and that is its primary objective, so you stay home and nothing matters anymore. I want to briefly pivot with the time that we've got left. One of the Donald Trump sort of brand indicators is that he specifically targets individuals by name. He loves the nicknames. We can call him Little Hand Don, you know, the Orange King, right? All of it. But he loves to give everybody nicknames, and he loves to attack individuals and to bring the power of the MAGA regime mob down on individuals. And in fact, in his pseudo State of the Union address after being sworn into office this very year, he name-checked Leader Abrams. Let's take a listen.
And much lesser things, things that take place in the home, they call.
$1.9 billion to recently created decarbonization of homes committee, headed up, and we know she's involved. Just at the last moment, the money was passed over by a woman named Stacey Abrams. Have you ever heard of her?
A I'll just say this, Leader Abrams, when the entire Republican caucus of the U.S. Congress boos, that is a huge personal accomplishment. So I'll say congratulations to you. But this targeting of individuals, whether it's Mark Elias, the law firm he used to work for, going after Judge Dugan with a criminal prosecution, the selective prosecution of an LGBTQIA Lambda lawyer in Alabama. This individual intimidation is designed for a broader purpose. What is it?
So this is a combination of step 7 and step 8. So you scapegoat the marginalized, you scapegoat communities of color, you scapegoat women, you scapegoat the LGBTQIA plus community. You go after communities using DEI, which is why you watch this president and this administration and this party attack diversity, equity, and inclusion, because they are terrified that it actually works. And then you connect that to step 8, which is the civil society that protects all of us, the lawyers who fight for us, the universities who teach us, the philanthropies that invest in us, the protesters who speak up for us. But here's the thing. If you are the average white guy in Wisconsin who's trying to figure out why does DEI matter to you, I would point out that the very first act of DEI in this country was the Revolutionary War, when we decided that you didn't have to be a land-holding man, white man in this country to have purpose and meaning and a vote. We fought an entire war to guarantee that white men of every economic class could participate fully in this country. And from that, we grew the rest of DEI. And it has taken us 250 years, but it is in our DNA that diversity, equity, and inclusion be who we are, because it started with making sure that white men of every stripe had access to what they needed, and the rest of us simply want to be a part of it as well. This is not about taking from one to give to the other. It is about expanding access to opportunity, because we all deserve access to the American dream. And if we believe in DEI, then we are patriots. And if we don't, then we are denying who we are as a nation, and we are on the wrong track.
Because all of us deserve the opportunity to be successful in this country. It is in our DEA. I thank her with my biggest heart, Stacey Abrams, everybody. Thank you for being with me. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.